Good morning. I'd like to welcome everybody. We have a number of visitors with us today. We're awful glad that you came to worship with us today. We have some local visitors, some from California, some from Tennessee, and some right here in Las Vegas. We're glad to have you. Every 4 years, there's a big event. And no, I'm not talking politics today. I've heard enough politics lately. The Olympics. And I know people that literally they are glued to the TV. I know people that even have been saved up and gone to the Olympics. And they take it in. I remember as a child when they would be going on, of course, at some of the off events, would be going outside, would be having races against each other and jumping over things and, you know, kind of playing like the heroes that were on TV. I would like for us today to look, as the title says, Christian Olympics. We have things that are before us, things that we do. And in a lot of ways, I don't mean this frivolously or anything, but like when we watch on TV, then we go out and practice those things. In a lot of ways, when I come here, I get excited. And then when we leave these doors, we're doing like we see the heroes in the Bible. We want to emulate them. We want to be the soul winners that we see in the Bible. And the examples and so forth. Nellie has requested the prayer for her and her family to be able to be that guide and leader that we see in the Bible. The scripture reading today was from Hebrews 12, verse 1. And it says, "Therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us." There's a lot of meat in that one verse. In the Olympics, they parade the athletes out to the crowd. What a thrill that must be for them. To think that their hard work, the cheering of people, you know, former athletes, maybe that used to be on the American team or their national team, shaking their hand, congratulating them, good luck, do your best. There's a lot of Christians that have gone on before us that are cheering us on, that are rooting us on, telling us, you do your best. We are surrounded by that host of witnesses. And it goes on to say, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us. When athletes are getting ready to compete, they've warmed up. They take off their warm-up uniform. They take off the sweats. They take off anything that might encumber them from competing in their event. They don't run with their bag strapped over their shoulder. They don't run with their sweatsuits on. They don't compete in any way that would keep them from performing their best. It says, let us lay aside every weight, worry, anger, guilt, self-doubt, anything that we might have that keeps us from performing our very best in this competition. And the sin. Lay aside the sin that entangles us, wraps us up, holds us back. You can't, You can't compete as effectively as you can as a Christian if you're wrapped up in sin. It's like a net. The more you struggle, the more you get tangled up. You've got to cast it off of you. That's what the Hebrew writing is saying. And then it says, then let us run with endurance. It's not a little 50-yard, 50-meter dash. Be faithful until death, and I will give you a crown of righteousness, Revelation 2:10. It is a race that from the time we've become a Christian, we don't stop until we die. First Corinthians 9, starting in verse 24, Paul writes, I would have loved to have known more, a little bit more about Paul as an individual. I wouldn't be surprised if he was athletic. Whether he was or wasn't, it really doesn't matter, but he sure speaks with some authority about it. The people he is speaking to, they were athletic. And he was striking chords during the time of the Roman Empire. The sports games and the gymnasiums, very popular. So whether he was or not, he was speaking in terms that people could understand. In chapter 9, starting in verse 24, he's writing to the Corinthians. He says, do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. And everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown. This is very important. If we're competing, you got to compete by the rules. You can't have the attitude, well, I'll just cut corners. I'll cut corners off the race. I'll get a start before everybody else. You're disqualified. There we go. He goes on to say, therefore I run thus, not with uncertainty. Thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified. He runs with confidence. When he fights, it's not just like training, hitting the air. You're actually fighting. And he disciplines himself that after he's told others, he won't be disqualified. Look at the people Paul has influenced. Hundreds, thousands, still today is influencing and inspiring people through his inspired word. He says, I discipline my body. That's one of the greatest benefits of competing in sports, is the confidence that you have, that you discipline yourself. That if you can discipline yourself in this, why can't you in other areas of your life? And we can apply that. He says, I discipline my body, lest when I've preached to others, I become disqualified. If I don't live up to the things I preach about, I become disqualified. Just like Paul. Ephesians 6, again, Paul is writing to the Christians in Ephesus. In Ephesians 6, 12, he says, for we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual wickedness in the heavenly places. It is a fight, and it's a fight to the finish. It's not like a wrestling match that has timed rounds. That after you've beaten your opponent, that opponent helps you up and you congratulate each other. It's a fight to the finish because who we're wrestling is against the devil, the powers of this age. You know the forces that you fight every day when we wake up, when we head out our door, when we're on the freeway, when we're at the grocery store. You know the opponents that are fighting you. We don't wrestle against flesh and blood. It's against spiritual nature. And we've got to be strong. And it is a fight to the finish. There are some unsanctioned events that we as Christians sometimes want to engage in. The Olympic Committee, they add events periodically. And you've got your typical 100-meter dash and your marathon and stuff like this. But there are some unsanctioned events that people sometimes want to have. We as Christians cannot get involved in unsanctioned events as Christians. One of the events that we often want to, and I know I often get involved in, is jumping to conclusions. We think that's a Christian Olympic event. Sometimes we're able to jump pretty fast and pretty quick and pretty high. James 1:19 says, "So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath." If we lived more by that one verse, we as Christians would be a lot better off. But boy, we may not want to run with endurance that race is set before us. We may not want to wrestle against the devil. But many times I know me, I'm more than willing to participate in jumping events, jumping to conclusions. There's shooting events in the Olympics. They have the I think the biathlon, where they're skiing and they stop at a shooting station. They have, I think, archery, things like that. We as Christians, we can't get involved in the unsanctioned event of shooting off our mouths. I know I'm sometimes guilty of that. Proverbs 21:23 says, "Whoever guards his mouth and tongue keeps his soul from troubles." Ain't that the truth? Sometimes we want to compete in shooting off our mouth. Another shooting event, taking pot shots at others. Isn't that easy to do? Don't really have to be accurate. You don't have to, all you got to do is take a shot at them. Still does the damage. Matthew 7:3. One of the most visual images to me in the Bible, Jesus is asking, "Why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but you do not consider the plank in your own?" I just picture a guy with a big old beam in his eye telling the other, you know, "Hey, you've got a little speck of dust in yours." Running to do evil. We had a sermon from Proverbs 6 recently, and one of the verses is talking about that whole list of things. What an abomination this list of things are to God. And one of the things that's an abomination to God is feet that are swift in running to evil. Hopefully we have feet that are swift to help others, feet that are swift to pray for others, feet that are swift to preach to others, to lend a hand, to encourage. Hopefully that is what our feet are fast in going to, rather than here in Proverbs 6, hopefully we don't have feet that are swift in going to evil. Why? Because it's wrong. It's an abomination to God. There's throwing events. You throw javelins and shot put and discus and the hammer throw and all that stuff. Well, some Christians are pretty good at throwing tantrums. I've known some gold medalists in that. Philippians 2:4, again, Paul says, let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others. We usually throw tantrums when we don't get our way, when we're focusing on ourselves. Well, Paul's saying, don't look out not only for your interest, but for the interest of others. We see Jesus is perfect in every example that he does. Jesus gave us this example in Matthew 26:39. It's just a short time before he will be arrested, beaten severely, and facing crucifixion. This is the night that Jesus would be betrayed. He has just recently had his last meal with his apostles, and he went out to the garden to pray. And this is the prayer. He's not asking, dear God, help me escape out of this. I'd be worried, you know, how can I get out of Jerusalem? How can I lay low? How can I, you know, I need a weapon. I need to fight these people when they're coming after me. He doesn't pray that. He went a little farther and fell on his face and prayed, saying, oh, my Father, if it's possible, Jesus knows what's going to happen. He's not looking forward to it. The man Jesus is not looking forward to what's coming. He says, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. I know I need that attitude more. Not to throw a tantrum because I don't get my way. God, what is it that you want from me? What is it that you want me to do? We cast blame. In John 8, verses 2 through 9, it says, now early in the morning, he came again into the temple, and all the people came to him, and he sat down and taught them. Then the scribes and Pharisees brought to him a woman caught in adultery. And when they had set her in the midst, they said to him, teacher, this woman was caught in adultery, in the very act. Now Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned. But what do you say? They're bringing him, he's sitting there in the temple, they're bringing a woman to him. This woman's been caught in the very act of adultery. What do you say about it? Moses says we should kill her. We should stone her. What do you say about it? This they said, testing him, that they might have something of which to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down and wrote on the ground with his finger, as though he did not hear. So when they continued asking him, he raised himself up and said to them, he who is without sin among you, let him throw a stone at her first. One thing I noticed, they didn't bring the man who was committing adultery also. This is just a setup job. They wanted to try to set Jesus up. They wanted to cast blame on this woman. Jesus didn't say what she did was okay. But he said, those of you that don't have sin, you throw the first rock. There's plenty of rocks around here. Everybody grab one. The one that doesn't have sin in their life, you throw the rock first. Then those who heard it, being convicted by their conscience, went out one by one, beginning with the oldest, even to the last. And Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in their midst. They wanted to cast blame. Jesus hit them right in the conscience. And the older ones, the more mature, they got it first, and they started leaving. And then the others left also. A lot of times, we want to compete by slinging mud. Oh, I can sling mud farther than you. I can get that mud a lot farther than you can. Psalms 6:19 says, "A false witness who speaks lies and one who sows discord among brethren." That's the last of those of that list of the things that are an abomination to God. One that speaks lies, slinging mud. 1 Timothy 5:13, Paul writes to his Timothy, "And besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things which they ought not." We don't want to be caught up in those unsanctioned events. We want to use, if we're going to be throwing things about, let's make sure it's not mud. Let's throw scriptures. Let's throw blessings, prayers, good tidings to people. We need to use our time, our talents, our energy in the right ways. Athletes, the more focused they are, the more they're focused in the right thing. Everything they do, everything from what they eat to their workout to their sleep patterns. And you get up to the Olympic level, they are very focused. We need to use our time, talents, and energy the right ways and be focused. We need to run the race. Not as some of the scriptures say, our mouths. And we need to fight the good fight and not each other. Not the world. We need to fight that good fight. And in doing so, we will accomplish great things. I'd like to end with 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 7 and 8. This is Paul at the end of his life. It is toward the end of what we have as the last letter that we know of, that we have, that Paul wrote. And it was to Timothy. Paul is in a jail cell awaiting trial and execution. And he writes to Timothy, "I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day. And not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing." What an encouraging word to Timothy. "I'm not facing death. I'm getting ready to go receive my crown. Not a perishable one, one that never perishes for eternity." And it's not just me, Timothy. It's you too. It's to all who have loved and followed Jesus Christ. Let's be active. Beginning of a new week. Get pumped up, jazzed up, revved up to go out there and fight that fight again. To run that race. Let's do it with gusto. Let's do it with focus. Let's do it knowing that the crown we receive is imperishable. If you're not a Christian, to run that race, you've got to be a Christian. Your race doesn't start until you're a Christian. When you're baptized into the church and added by the Lord. If you need to be baptized, we urge you to come forward. If you need to repent, if you've gotten off track of your training in the Christian Olympics, if you've gotten off track and need to repent, get back on track, get back in training, you have an opportunity. If you need prayers of the congregation, we had a prayer for Nellie earlier. Whatever your need, please come forward as we're led in the invitation song.